Those Jordan's waves around me roll, fearless I launch away. We will rest in the fair and happy land by and by, just across on the evergreen, evergreen shore. Sing the song of Moses and the Lamb by and by, and dwell with Jesus evermore.
Song of Revelation will be 903.
We want to ask the question this morning, what are you addicted to? Now, some will immediately say, well, I don't have an addiction. I'm not that kind of a person. I'm not addicted to anything. But one of the things that we have to understand is there are two meanings to addiction or two ideas behind it. One would be something that would be bad, of course. But in the Scriptures, we read about an addiction that's a good addiction. I want us to notice that as we get started. In 1 Corinthians chapter 16 and verse 15, Paul writes there, I beseech you, brethren, you know the house of Stephanas, that it is the first fruits of Achaia, and that they have addicted themselves to the ministry of the saints. So sometimes when we hear the word addiction, we just automatically assume, oh, that's something bad. That's something sinful, that's something immoral, that's something illegal. That we shouldn't take part in. But there is simply the definition of addiction, which would be to be given over to something, to be controlled by that thing, to be driven or compelled to participate in that activity or to perform those actions. And so in this case, the house of Stephanas was a household that had been given over to ministry, to serving the saints. And that was a good addiction. And so as we go through these, we're going to look at some different things that people are addicted to. And most of them are going to be things that are bad. But there are going to be some things in the list that are good things to be addicted to or to be given to. Now this is the only time in the King James Version, and I don't know of in other translations, I don't know that it is used at all even. But in the King James, this is the only place where it actually uses the word addicted. But as we mentioned, the idea of being given to something, being controlled by that thing. Paul, in writing to the Romans, told them that whoever they submitted themselves to obey, that was whose servants they were. And he said, you can give yourself over to sin and to Satan and to serve that, or you can give yourself over to serve God and righteousness. And it's your choice, but once you give yourself over to that, then you would be controlled by that, and you would be the servants of either Satan or God, depending on which choice you made. And so it is with the things in our lives. All of us have things that we are obsessed with or compelled with or that control us in some way or another. And there are a lot of things that we do, some good and some bad. And so we not want to get rid of those bad things, but encourage the growth of the good things in our lives. So we're going to quickly, there's several of these, but we're not going to dwell a long time on them because we'll see pretty quickly how most of these things work. So as we consider this, some are addicted to their appetites. Proverbs chapter 23 and verses 1 through 3. The writer of Proverbs there says, when you sit to eat with a ruler, consider diligently what is before you, and put a knife to your throat if you're a man given to appetite. Do not be desirous of his dainties, for they are deceitful meat. And then in Romans 16, 17 and 18, he says, I beseech you, brethren, mark them which have caused division and offenses contrary to the doctrine which you have learned, and avoid them. For they that are such serve not our Lord Jesus Christ, but their own belly. And by good words and fair speeches, they deceive the hearts of the simple. And so here again, in Old and New Testament, in Philippians 3, 18 and 19 as well. For many walk of whom I have told you before, even now I tell you weeping, that they are the enemies of the cross of Christ. Their end is destruction. Their God is their belly, and their shame, their glory is in their shame. They mind earthly things. And so here are these ideas here of serving the appetite of, particularly in these cases, the appetite physically of the belly. Now, it doesn't, God obviously doesn't say don't eat things that taste good. He doesn't say don't enjoy life, don't enjoy food, but we do have to control ourselves. We're going to have to do that here in a couple of hours. We're going to have to control ourselves. Some may do better than others at controlling themselves with all that good food over there. But we need to not be given over to that. We can't allow that to control our lives or to put that before those things that God would have us to do. And notice in Romans 16 there, he talks about, he said, their Lord is not Jesus Christ. They're not serving the Lord. They're serving their own belly. And that could be the case with us if we allow it. And then some are given to or addicted to change. Some people just want something to change all the time. They're just not happy. Now, you know, not all change is bad change, but not all change is good change. In Proverbs 24, verses 21 and 22, it says, my son, fear the Lord and the king. Do not meddle with those that are given to change. For their calamity shall rise suddenly, and who knows the ruin of them both. And here in this case, when he talks about given to change, in this context, he's specifically talking about those that want to have a revolution, those that want to overthrow the government. And he says, son, don't get involved with those folks. That's disastrous down that road. And so we keep that in mind and think about not just obviously in that area, but change. Some change is a good thing, but when we're talking about changing the things that God has established, he says to him, you fear God and you fear the king. Now, obviously we don't have a king, but we have governing officials and we need to respect them. They were elected by the people, and they do those things sometimes that we disagree with. Sometimes they do things that we do agree with. But we are to respect them regardless of our personal feelings in the matter. And he warns us of the dangers of getting involved with people that would want to be troublemakers of that kind. And then some are given to fornication. In Jude chapter 1 and verse number 7, he says, even as Sodom and Gomorrah and the cities about them in like manner, giving themselves over to fornication and going after strange flesh, are set forth for an example, suffering the vengeance of eternal fire. Now this is a big thing in our society today. Sexual addiction is a new term, a fairly new term. It's only been around probably the last 10 or 15 years or so, maybe 20. But this is a new idea. That has come out, that the people can be just given over to fornication, to these sexual desires, and going even further beyond that. He says, going after strange flesh. He indicates the homosexuality that they practiced in Sodom and Gomorrah as well there. And he talks about what a problem that is. They are an example, suffering the vengeance of eternal fire. And that should be a reminder to all of us that God takes it seriously when He lays down restrictions on things. And this is a perfect example of a case where He's created something that is a good thing. He created them male and female from the beginning. And he said that was very good when he saw the man and the woman together in marriage. But he says, outside of marriage, that's not good. It's not a beautiful thing. And so we need to be sure that we keep things in their proper context. But some are given over to or addicted to fornication. And some are addicted to wickedness. Ecclesiastes 8:8 says, "There is no man that has power over the spirit to retain the spirit, neither has he power in the day of death, and there is no discharge in the war. Neither shall wickedness deliver those that are given to it." So wickedness isn't going to save you. Well, I would have thought that would have been obvious, but it seems like there are some people who really do hold that old idea that I'd rather rule in hell with the devil than have to serve in heaven with God. But they just have a serious misunderstanding of the way things work. There won't be anybody ruling in hell. Satan is there to suffer just like everybody else that goes there. And he's not going to be ruling. He's not going to be sitting there enjoying the good life and punishing other people. No, no. That's the Hadean idea of Hades and the Greek mythology and Roman mythology of the god of the underworld, that he's enjoying things and controlling everybody and punishing everybody else. That's not the biblical model. That's not what God said was going to happen. He didn't put Satan to be in control of hell and punish the bad people. He created hell for Satan to be punished. But because people go there, will go there because they follow Satan instead of following God. And that's a sad thing. It is certainly a sad thing when we consider that when God created hell, He did not create it with the intention of it being a place for people. His creation, His human beings that He created on this earth, were not intended to go there. And it still is not what He wants. The Bible clearly says God is not willing that any should perish. He doesn't want anyone to go there. He created that place to punish Satan and his angels that followed him and rebelled against God. That's why it was created. But if we as human beings choose to follow Satan, we'll get to go there as well and suffer with Satan. But we need to be aware of that. And we need to consider that some are addicted to pleasure. Just whatever, if it feels good, do it. Whatever you like, just make the most of it. Some, you know, whether it's adrenaline junkies that just, you know, whatever gets their blood pumping and gets that adrenaline flowing, and they'll do just about anything to try to get that kind of a high from that. Of course, the fornication would fit in this with the pleasure. The appetites could also fit in here with the pleasure. There's so many things. But just basically going out and trying to find something that feels good. And in fact, some people have defined addictions as trying to find something that feels good. Trying to find something that will make the pain go away. And whether that's a physical pain or a mental pain or an emotional pain, whatever that pain is, people are constantly trying to just make that hurt go away and feel better. And that's how many people get involved in all sorts of addictions. In Isaiah 47, verses 7 and 9, "You said, 'I shall be a lady forever,' so that you did not lay these things to your heart, neither did you remember the latter end of it. Therefore, hear now this, you that are given to pleasures, that dwell carelessly, that say in your heart, 'I am and none else beside me. I shall not sit as a widow, neither shall I know the loss of children.' But these two things shall come to you in one moment, in one day, the loss of children and widowhood. They shall come upon you in their perfection, in the multitude of your sorceries, and for the general abundance of your enchantments." These folks had given themselves over to all sorts of pleasure, and they weren't concerned. They didn't think anything bad could happen to them. They were even using sorcery and all sorts of magical enchantments to ward off all the punishments that God might ever send their way. And he says, that's not going to work. He said, you're giving over to pleasure and you're going to pay for it. You're going to suffer as a result of this. Then we want to consider also that there are those who are addicted to or given to covetousness. In Jeremiah chapter 6, verses 11 through 15, it's a fairly long section, but here again, he's warning the people of the problems, as many times in the prophets. You know, you could just about sum the prophets up as, you've been doing bad things, God's going to punish you. That's just about every one of the prophets, what they have to say for the most part. But here, and Jeremiah is warning them that he is full of fury. He is so angry. And he's going to pour it out on them, and he's going to pour it out on the children all over the world of the Israelites that have been disobedient. And it's just going to destroy everything. And he says in verse 13, for from the least even to the greatest, every one is given to covetousness. From the prophet to the priest, everyone deals falsely. And so you've got a group of people here who are so given over to materialism and covetousness and greed and these desires to have everything that they're lying and cheating and stealing, and they're horrible people. And yet, we live in a society that many times pushes this same kind of materialism, encourages this same kind of covetousness. That if somebody else has got more than I've got, then that's not fair. I need to have what they have. I need to take theirs away from them and get it for me. And we need to watch out for that. That's a dangerous attitude to have. Covetousness is a great sin. In fact, in the New Testament, covetousness is compared to idolatry. And so that's one of the things in the New Testament we're told to put away covetousness, which is idolatry. When we worship the almighty dollar, in our case, back in their day, it wouldn't have been the dollar. It would have been gold or silver or the denarii or whatever that, you know, whatever their money form was. Back in the Old Testament, it would have been the shekel or whatever. You know, but if we're worshiping that and driving after that, that can become our God. That can become the thing that we serve. That can become the thing that controls our life. And we need to beware of that. And not ever give in to that, because that is an addiction that can cause us harm. And then some are given to wine. 1 Timothy 3, 2 and 3, speaking specifically about the bishop or the elder, it says they must be blameless, the husband of one wife, vigilant, sober, of good behavior, given to hospitality, apt to teach, not given to wine, no striker, not greedy of filthy lucre, but patient, not a brawler, not covetousness. And we can see all around us the difficulties that come as a result of the addiction to alcohol. And what a problem that is, and how many families that destroys. And it certainly is a problem to be given to wine. And there are many people that I've talked to over the years that want to stop. And they know that it's destroyed, that they've lost their wives or husbands, they've lost their children, they've lost their job, they've lost their house, they've lost, you know, wrecked cars and hurt people in the process. And they want to stop, but they're given to it. They've given themselves over to that addiction. In this case, of course, specifically, he says wine, but obviously any alcohol that could be an addictive thing that could cause us a great deal of trouble. And then, of course, there are some who are given to idolatry. Acts 17 and verse 16, this is what Paul found when he was in the city of Athens. And you remember hearing about Mars Hill, and I can't imagine what that place must have been like. With all of the, he said there was an idol there set up and an altar there set up for every god, so many that they even had the one set up to the the God we might have forgotten about, better make him one too, the one we don't know. Just kind of like, you know, that's kind of like the tomb of the unknown soldier or something. You know, we don't know who, but we're gonna make a monument to that person anyway. Well, they did that with their gods. They said, well, we got this one to Zeus and this one to Diana and we got this one over here and you know, they got one to everybody, and you know, in case we've forgotten one or in case there's one we don't know about, let's make an altar to that one too. Let's worship that one too. And it says there in Acts 17:16. That Paul's spirit was stirred within him because he saw the city wholly, completely given to idolatry. And now, obviously, in today's society, in America at least, it may become that way in the future as more and more people are heading away from Christianity. But it's not necessarily an idol. It may not be a false altar specifically like they had in that day and time. But there are a lot of things that become idols to people. It may be a person. It could be an actor or a singer, or it could be a husband or wife or a child or a grandchild or a parent, or you know, it could be a next door neighbor for that matter. Any number of people that we become addicted to. That person becomes more important to us than God. And my wife and I always agreed that we'll always be the second most important person in our lives, in our marriage. God comes first, and then we're second under Him. We're never going to be the most important because God's got to take that place. When we put somebody else above God in that relationship, that's a problem. And it may be, you know, for some it may be their car. It may be a boat. It may be sports. It may be shopping. It may be, you know, it could be anything out there that somebody takes that thing and says, I'm going to just give myself over to this. This is going to control me. Now, they don't say that. They don't say, you know, what I really want to do is just be completely controlled by my car. Well, no, that's not what they say. But sometimes it happens. They wind up so concerned about that car that they put it before the people in their lives. You know, it may be a house. It may be some sort of hobby. It could be hunting. It could be, you know, and it's with a lot of these, it's not that those things themselves are bad things. But if we give ourselves over to them and put them above God, they become bad things. And that's the problem with addiction. Is that it becomes something where we've put this thing higher than everything else and it destroys our lives as a result of that. We mentioned a little bit earlier, but Titus 1:7 mentions that some are given over to or addicted to money. And this kind of goes along with the covetousness, Titus 1:7. Again, he says, similarly to what Timothy had said, a bishop must be blameless as a steward of God, not self-willed, not soon angry, not given to wine. He repeats that one. But then he also says, no striker, not given to filthy lucre. Now, filthy lucre is not a term we use a whole lot. But what he means is not given over to the love of money. And so it doesn't mean that they're not industrious and hardworking and earn for their family and take care of their family. That's a good thing. The Bible says if you don't do that, you're worse than an unbeliever. But again, they're not given over to the control of that money. And that's a dangerous thing when people get into that. Well, let's turn a little bit now as we get toward the end of our list. We've got a few that are more on the good side. And we saw, of course, we started with the good one, with the family that was addicted to serving the saints and ministering to the saints as God called them to do. But we want to also look at hospitality. In Romans chapter 12 and verse number 13, the Roman church is told to be distributing to the necessity of the saints, given to hospitality. They need to allow hospitality to be the driving force in their relationship with other people. Now again, in this case, the addiction is not taking the place of God. It's not putting something else above God, but rather it is putting something God has commanded us to do as our priority. We're going to do this thing that God has told us to do. And then, of course, we also read of fasting and prayer. 1 Corinthians 7:5 and Acts 6:4 both mention this. In 1 Corinthians 7:5, he's talking to the husband and wife, again about that sexual relationship they have. And he says for them not to be apart from one another, except by agreement for a time, so that you may give yourselves to fasting and prayer, and then come together again, so that Satan won't tempt you to infidelity because of the lack of self-control. The King James says incontinency, but a lack of ability to control that desire. And in Acts 6:4, it says, but we, he was talking about the time, this is of course when they set up those that were to feed the widows. And they picked out the seven men that we often talk of as being the first deacons in the church there in Jerusalem. And he said, you know, get some people who can do this job, but we as the apostles will give ourselves continually to prayer and to the ministry of the word. And so that was their addiction, was to pray and to serve the word. They were going to pick some other men whose addiction would be to serve the physical needs of the folks in the congregation there, but they were going to serve the spiritual food. They were going to serve the word of God to the folks in that situation. And then, of course, there are those who are given to God. In 2 Corinthians 8:1-5, those in Macedonia were quite poor, and yet they were still able to give quite liberally because, he says, I bear record in verse 3, beyond their power they were willing of themselves, praying us with much entreaty that we would receive the gift and take it upon us the fellowship of ministering to the saints. And this they did, not just as we had hoped, but first they gave their own selves to the Lord and to us by the will of God. If we submit ourselves to God, if we give ourselves over to Him, if we're addicted to God, then that should become our primary addiction that wipes out anything else that we might ever be addicted to. As we consider closing, we want to consider 1 Corinthians 6. Verse 1 Corinthians 6:12-13, Paul says, all things are lawful to me, but all things are not expedient. All things are lawful for me, but I will not be brought under the power of any. And that goes to some of the things we talked about earlier, where the thing in and of itself is not a bad thing, but we don't want to be under the power of that thing. We want to be in control of that, not allow it to be in control. Of course, that's one of the problems with addiction is the addict always says, well, I can quit anytime I want to. I'm in control here. But of course, they're not in control. And until they actually realize that they're not in control anymore. Some have said that addiction is the only prison where the key and the lock are on the inside. When we are addicted to something, we've got the lock and the key in there with us. Nobody else can break your addiction. You got to do it yourself. Nobody else has that power. And then also in verses 19 and 20, he says, do you not know that your body is the temple of the Holy Ghost, which is in you, which you have of God, and you are not your own. You are bought with a price. Therefore, glorify God in your body and in your spirit, which are God's. They belong to God, and we need to be glorifying Him in that way. Just wanted real quick to mention these things. This is a doctor who's done study on addictions. He particularly did study on sexual addictions, but the same principle applies whatever the thing that somebody's addicted to is. The first step is, of course, becoming addicted. Somebody first comes in contact with that thing, and then they partake of it, they participate in it, they get involved in it, and then they become addicted to it, to where it becomes a driving force in their lives. Many times it's intelligent people that know better, but they still get caught up in it. And they go into it many times thinking, well, just this one time won't hurt. Or you know, I'll be able to handle it. I won't get sucked into that. But then they do. The second step, of course, is an escalation. it grows. Now, I want us to think about this. Let's think about this in terms of giving ourselves over to God. This is exactly what God wants us to do in our relationship with Him. The first step is addiction. He wants us to love Him with our heart, soul, strength, and mind. If that's not an addiction, I don't know what is. He wants us to completely and wholly give ourselves over to Him. But then, if it's, can you imagine that? So you've completely given yourself over to Him. But then we need to escalate that. Well, how do you escalate? You're already given completely to something. How do you escalate that? But it's possible. You continue to grow and find new ways to dive even deeper into God's love and into obedience to God. But there's often with any addiction, there's an escalation. The first time it starts is not, it may take one drink or two drinks or three drinks, and then the next time it may be six or seven, as you go down the line, months and years into the addiction, it just gets stronger and stronger. The third step is a desensitization. And in this case, that would, one of the things that people are concerned about is, this is a problem, it's causing me a problem, so I'm going to back off, I'm going to stop doing this. Other people are making fun of me, or it's causing problems in my life. And so, because I'm sensitive to what other people are doing, I don't do those things. Because I don't want to bother them and hurt them and those kind of things. But with the addiction, I don't care about that. I don't care if other people get offended or upset. And this is the way it has to be with our life with Christ as well. We have to get to the point where the world is dead to us and Christ is alive. And that nothing that anybody out there in the world says or does can push us away from serving Christ. And we need to be desensitized, not in the sense that we don't care about them, but that we don't let them push us away from our addiction to Christ and to God. And then the fourth phase is acting out. And that's the phase where sometimes we never really get there with God. We come to church. But do we really live each and every day when we're not here together? Are we really out there living our addiction to God? Are we acting out? And I don't use acting there in the sense of like an actor pretending, but are we actually living it out? Is the term that we would really say. And this is the thing that happens many times with other addicts is they blame everybody else for their problem. Well, yes, your fault. You did it. We don't want to be that kind of person and act out in that way. But what we do want to do is let everybody that sees us and that knows us be able to know that we belong to God. And we want to think about this as we ask these final two questions. What are you addicted to? You're addicted to something. I promise you, you are. If you don't know what it is, spend some time figuring it out. If it's not God, then whatever it is needs to go so that it can be God that you're addicted to. You can be addicted to God and be addicted to prayer and serving God and being pleasing to Him. Now, when you think about those things, are your addictions bringing you closer to heaven or pulling you farther away? Because there's no such thing as a neutral addiction. You're either going to be addicted to something that's dragging you into sin and turmoil and problems, or are you going to be addicted to something that is from God and is heavenly and spiritual and is pulling you closer to heaven and farther away from earth? Which one is it? If you have a need to respond to God's invitation at this time, please do so as we stand and as we sing. Lord, you be free from